tonight on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. We're going to do part one of your Week in IndyCar listener Q&A coming off of the Honda Indy 200 doubleheader at Mid-Ohio. Plus, what else do we have? Oh, I don't know, a bunch of silly season things, some news that's upcoming, a lot of stuff going on. Three races left this year, and nothing slowing down, nothing shocking, to recite one of my favorite Jane's Addictions song titles. I am Marshall Pruitt. This is our little Marshall Pruitt Podcast, where you send in questions each week about IndyCar, and I try and answer them with the least amount of stupidity. Don't always succeed, yet many of you come back. So hopefully you enjoy this little idiotic run through whatever my brain happens to fart out. Need to say big thanks to you for your questions each week. I have fun with this show. I don't take it too seriously. I leave in all the mistakes, and there are many. And, it's fun. This is my podcast equivalent of kicking up my feet and looking out on the beautiful ocean and daydreaming. So there you go. Want to say a big thank you as well to the Justice Brothers, rounding out year two of their partnership with us. And yeah, I really hope we get to do more years, because they're just really good people with great automotive chemicals and lubricants I've used since 1986. Really, really, truly have. The Justice Brothers are fine, fine partners of ours, along with Cooper Tires. We are getting close to the end of year three, and I have really enjoyed being a part of their family as well. And finally, we have TorontoMotorsports.com, our spirit animal, the ones that make all kinds of great t-shirts, stickers, sell a bunch of memorabilia up there in good old Canada. You might check out TorontoMotorsports.com for their goods. Then finally, Bell Racing Helmets USA. They keep your brains in really good shape. They protect you. They look really good. I tell you, I'm keen on some Bell Racing helmetage. I got plenty I could tell you about what's going on at home and a bunch of other things, but I'm not going to, because I'm just in the mood to go. It is 6:34 p.m. on a Monday night. I'm going to likely miss the openers for Monday Night Football, and that's just fine. We have a busy start to tomorrow, heading out of the house early-ish, so it would behoove me to get rolling with your questions, get a little music bed coming in here, and you know, we have a fine pair of question documents compiled by our pal Tim Falkowitz. I'm going to stray from that just because we've got a couple late questions in on the good old tweeters that I'm looking at, so I'm actually going to knock off a few of those first before we get into everything that Tim prepared. Y'all sent in a lot of questions about Santino Ferrucci and making a mockery of his fine front row start on Sunday. So we're going to get to that in a moment. But let's get rolling here first with Vincent, 1701. Good pal. Love Vincent and his family there in Florida. He says, I know it's Florida, so St. Pete should happen, but I haven't heard anything about building the track, the number of fans allowed, etc., and I'm a 10-plus year ticket holder. Vincent wanting to know if the season finale, the October 25 race on the streets of St. Pete, will go forward. There have not been official anythings from the series or the promoter about it being a go. I have heard, though, as of today, a certain guy who owns the racing series, as I try to clean my glasses here, a certain guy who owns the series has told some folks that it is a go and it is happening. So don't have that answer yet, Vincent, on will it have fans? And if so, how many? But it's good to hear that from a pretty solid source that the captain himself is definitely planning on flying down and for there to be a race. Where else should we go here? Eric Haman. Haman? You might have to help me. I'm thinking of Paul Heyman from WWE, but Paul Heyman, Eric Haman, Eric Haman, I don't know, but I love your last name, brother. What do you make of the rest of this year for teams like Andretti, Ray Hall, Edelman, Lanigan, and Penske? Do you think we'll see some consistency, or will we continue to have different podiums each week? Oh, consistency. What is this crazy thing you talk about, Eric? No, that's been the beautiful thing about this year. Other than Scott Dixon winning four times, there has not been consistency. So even when we go to a place like Mid-Ohio that the guy, I think, actually literally owns, I believe he's got the deed to the place. What? What the hell was that? So, no. If we take 2020 on face value and try and use the least amount of data and trending possibilities, the Andretti Autosport team is going to have a terrible Indy GP. Not because they're bad people and don't deserve to have a good one, but they just had a great race. So the way 2020 has been working out, the Harvest Grand Prix might be brutal. RLL, yeah, Takuma Sato, the guy with all the momentum, nowhere last weekend. And I know Sunday through alternate, was it Sunday through alternate strategy and running long, whatever, he had a little bit of a time in the sun, but really faded in both. Wasn't even there on Saturday, faded on Sunday. Penske, yeah, I mean, it's just been super streaky. I know that all three of their drivers have now won. I know that Joseph has, what, two victories, but Simon's been everywhere, hit everything but the pace car, proverbially. His fortunes have risen and fallen and done more falling, which is just strange. Normally, Mr. Consistent. Joseph has looked really good, but not really victory caliber competitive, more than I would expect this year. And our man Will Power season has just been pretty much like throwing a bowling ball into a washing machine, bouncing around, making a lot of noise. You think the door is going to fly off and whatever. And then, you know, it goes a little quiet and then you get more sound and fury and, hey, we got to win. And holy cow, one of those Will Power wins we don't see very often, Eric. We used to see a ton of, but we haven't seen for a while. That just putting a mud stomping on everybody, leaving everybody behind. No question about who the man was. We haven't seen one of those Will Power races in a little bit. So that all points to the word consistency. We shouldn't expect it at all. And if it does arrive, then boy, that would be spectacular. Our man Duncan Idaho says, with the season winding down, has there been any talk around the series or drivers about holding an IndyCar iRacing challenge during the off season? That says, have the wounds not healed yet? And also throws in a delightful best wishes to you and your wife and salutations to the cats. That's a bit of a new twist, Duncan. Thank you. I don't know, first of all. I know that when I asked however many months ago, when the iRacing Challenge was happening, as to whether they would look into making it an off-season thing, semi-permanent, maybe even permanent thing, there seemed to be some positive traction behind that. I can't honestly recall which head of communications was in place then. I don't know if the person in charge of marketing and such is thinking in that direction, so question without a intelligent answer that I can provide at this stage, but I will make a point of asking. The series would also tell you that while the series has contracts in place with the teams, the 22 teams that have leader circle contracts, and those teams have contracts with their drivers, I don't know. I do know. IndyCar can't just say, hey, we're doing an IndyCar iRacing Challenge during the offseason, and all of our drivers are going to compete. There's no contractual leverage to make that happen. There could be through that aforementioned, hey, we give you money through the leader circle, and those drivers are on contracts with your teams, and we're not saying we're going to take it away. If you don't, make them run, but we are going to apply some sort of pressure. I mean, I don't think things would get that far, but I just mentioned that part and maybe put a little bit of an accent on that, Duncan, because would I expect Connor Daly, Hinch, and a handful of others to do some iRacing because maybe Santino, I know he enjoyed it. There were some who really did. I think the vast majority would opt out and say no. Just no. We did it because there was nothing else. We did it to try and entertain our fans when the world was turned off. Well, since it's been turned back on and we know we're going racing again next year, I think that might be the answer from about half the field. And I think there might be an emphatic, heck no. So maybe, to your point, could this be a great opportunity to keep it going but adopt a sim racer? Or for the teams, IndyCar teams, we know that there is a desire by Roger Penske Duncan to have a greater linkage between IndyCar teams and Indy Lights teams. Is this an opportunity for IndyCar teams to nominate a Lights driver, Indy Pro 2000 driver, some sort of iRacing connection? If the IndyCar driver doesn't want to do it, maybe they can rope in one of the young pups to take their place, and who knows, maybe that starts a relationship. Maybe there's something there. But hey, we're going to do it, and we expect all of you to be there. I think you're going to hear a lot of veterans going, nope. Or maybe they can all hire Daniel Abt to drive for them, or the guy that Daniel Abt hired to drive for him. And maybe we just have folks, maybe we have costumes. Maybe we have make-believe IndyCar drivers competing, because I can tell you, there's many that even if you tried to force them, they wouldn't. So maybe we just get creative and dress fans up who are really good at sim racing and let them do the job. Let's see. Let's take one more that came in late here from Mark at MMB99999. Got to tell me how you came up with that one, Mark. Have you ever discussed with drivers where the current IndyCar ranks in terms of drivability in the wet? Sure looks a lot more challenging than sports cars and, of course, F1. Wonder if it's the higher center of gravity or do we need better wet tires? Have discussed it. Have also had it discussed with me, which is a way of saying some grumpy drivers picking up the phone or grabbing me in the paddock or whatever. The Firestone Grays, right? They have a gray band around the rain tires. I know for sure that we had, I think Hinch mentioned on the broadcast last weekend that the tires are particularly adept at going forward. So accelerating and stopping. He said that he felt that they were very good. The cornering. As I understand, there is one wet tire, meaning one, there's not multiple options, monsoon crazy, medium and light, intermediate, so yada, 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 like you might find in sports car racing throughout the world. Would say that the approach to save money and go with a single one type of rain tire fits all. It's always hard to please, right? It's always hard to be everything someone would want when you're trying to have a one-size-fits-all solution. So back in the day when we had multiple rain tire options with deeper, different sipes and some that were meant to evacuate a trillion gallons of water per second, per se, and some that were meant for just really light, very, very light amount of water or rain coming down to really tailor the tires to the conditions. When we had that, you didn't hear a lot of complaints. But yeah, no disrespect to Firestone. I think most of you know I hold them in the highest of esteem. This is just something where trying to solve all forms of water with one tire, you're never going to make folks happy unless the rain condition and or amount of water on the track is a perfect fit for that specific spec tire. Pretty hard to do. All right, let's go to the list assembled here. What do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different questions on the start to race 2 on Sunday involving one Santino Ferrucci. Why don't we start off with our good man, Mark Gillespie at WhiskeyCast. I think I mentioned I'm going to try and read more of your social media handles because some of them are just really funny. And some of them are lame, like mine, at Marshall Pruitt. Like, really? That's the best you could do? But Mark's at WhiskeyCast. We're going to go with his question. It says, which IndyCar driver gets decked by one of the other drivers first for an on-track accident? Rinus VK or Santino Ferrucci? He says that stunt Santino pulled at the start of Sunday's race was inexcusable. And you know what we have, Mark, following your question? We have at DC Marlowe, Dustin Marlowe. He might not agree with you. Says, I understand having to penalize Ferrucci in race two, but can we really hold that incident against him? It looked like he did his best to not get into Herta, but once off track, there was no way to control the car's trajectory with the super wet grass. There's a couple other questions in here on this theme, and I'll pick up the little strands of those once we get to the main item here. For those of you listening for the first time, by the way, did a little bit of a different thing of picking up a couple last-minute items on Twitter that didn't make it into the questions, but I saw them and knew them. I could roll through them pretty quickly. We normally start the show with the list and a bigger topic that we visit with for a little bit longer. So that's what we're going to do here. Why? Because it's fun when it's crashing in someone who is very polarizing like Santino. Love him or hate him. There's nobody in between on young Mr. Ferrucci. In terms of getting decked, VK, I don't know if folks know this, he's one of the bigger drivers in the series. Most folks would look at Ryan Hunter-Reay and say, yeah, Hunter-Reay, you know, he's not like big football lineman crazy guy, but you know, he's what, 6'1"-ish, 6'2" maybe. He and I are vaguely eye to eye. You know, I think he's just a little bit taller than I am. You know, decent frame on him. He's not somebody the average driver would want to go up and pick a fight with. So I just mentioned that about Ryan because VK is bigger than him, and he is certainly more broad in the shoulders, a little bit taller as well. I think he's a sweetheart of a kid outside the car, but just saying, that's not a bear I think most people would want to poke. You just don't, right? Ferrucci, I mean, he reminds me of the old movie Fletch. Now, granted, the tagline there was 6'6" with the afro. I think Santino might be 5'5" with his little explosion of hair on top of his head. That's a very minute, that's a compact human being. That's a pocket Ferrucci, okay? So just saying, if we're talking about who might get decked for doing something on track that pisses off another driver, most would steer clear of VK. Most are looking up to Rinus when they're talking to him. Santino? Yeah. I mean, you can see the full landscape of the top of his head while talking to the kid. And I'm not making fun of him. I'm just saying, like, one's pretty good size. The other one is very opposite of that. Most people are going to go for the smaller one, easier one to engage in fisticuffs. Do I think fisticuffs were deserved after Sunday's lap one? No, I don't. But let's get to Dustin's little note here. I was about to say not. I don't know. Hey, unpolished turd. That's what I call the show. We're keeping it in. Can we really hold it against him? Looks like he did his best to not get into Herta, but once off track, there is no way to control the car's trajectory. So 100% accurate on the did his best to not make contact with Colton. Have to absolutely agree that there was certainly no way he was going to control the car's trajectory while on grass, wet grass at that. Holding it against him, unfortunately, Dustin, yeah, 1,000%. Saw a headline on one website today that called Dixon's spin a rookie mistake. It's just a garbage headline. This is deservedly called a rookie mistake. He's not a rookie. He's in his second full season, so understand that. This, though, would fall into the category of rookie mistake for the sake of that's just something what I thought everyone knew not to do, to not do. Hey, you're blasting down the hill, you're heading out of the keyhole, and you're blasting down the long straight, and you're on the outside, and you're trying to race a guy for position. I know this is the start of the race. And you are putting yourself on the outside with a very fast driver, in this case, pole sitter Colton Herta, and you are giving him the keys to your fate. It's the thing that most drivers do not do unless they are highly confident their fate will be protected, or they have some form of speed advantage where they can go around the outside safely and or easily. None of those scenarios were what we saw taking place. What we saw was Santino get a really good run on the front row, Colton get an even better under braking and driving across the inside apex at the corner, and Santino not having as much of a head of steam, and Colton letting the car track out and taking full control of Santino's fate. And, oh, it's the same reason you don't see drivers do that at the Indy 500, going on the outside and letting the faster car on the inside dictate where you end up. It's just something that you, would have thought he would have known to not do. Clearly he didn't, or if he did and just hoped, he got a rude awakening that guys like Colton with the super take no prisoners attitude, and I know he might be Southern California chill and mellow and all that, in the car, no. Him assassin, him murderer. Do not ever mistake the kid's demeanor outside the car for what takes place inside the car. And so I don't know, again, what all Santino knows about Colton as a person, his driving personality, and so on. I'll tell you that Colton's comments in the post-race interview on NBC were pretty awesome, where he straight up admitted to putting Santino off the road because the guy exposed his belly. And I'm not saying it's the nicest thing to do, but man, I'm going to try and go around you, but I'm not in front of you, and your car is tracking out, and you're giving me no room. Well, since he was the car ahead by, what, half a car length and such, all these little unwritten rules, I know that there are even some that are truly written into the rule book, though, but these are the kinds of things where you go, the way the drivers, rest of the drivers are going to look at it is, oh, dude, really? Oh, well, you can't be too mad at Colton because you essentially handed him your steering wheel. And you driving in reaction to the line he chose to take said, screw you. Now, let's visit one other quick item here. What if this was Ryan Hunter-Reay starting on the outside? What if this was Alexander Rossi starting on the outside? Same exact scenario, truly identical scenario. Does Colton let his car track all the way out and push Ryan or Alexander off? I should say push, but I mean, again, take up the road they were planning on using? No, I don't think so. So that's another, again, just awareness thing, coming into the race, coming into the start. It's a lot of things to run through your mind. Who am I going to be running down to the first main corner with and hanging a right with? Well, this Colton Herta guy who's on pole and just truly is going at your throat any chance he gets. That's his mindset. Take no prisoners. Well, if I try this around the outside and don't get it done, what do I think he might do? Yeah, he's probably not going to save you a lot of road and say, well, you get to pay for this silly mistake of thinking I would slow myself, tighten my corner exit, and make sure that you are taken care of. You're not a teammate. You're not a friend. You're not a whatever. I don't care if we both drive using Honda engines. You're not one of us. You're not my pal. And sorry, buddy. I think that gets done to him by Scott Dixon, by Will Power, by Joseph Newgarden, by Graham Rahal, by you name it. I think what happened to Santino was exactly what he should have expected. So from that standpoint, yeah, if Colton was going to give a little tiny bit, it would have been to take care of a teammate who made the mistake of trying to pull off that same thing, not getting it done, and failing to hit the brakes and back out of it. I would like to think that with a fellow Andretti driver trying to go around the outside on the opening lap there, that again, Colton would either ease up a little bit to give him room, or really hope and believe that they would know to pull out of that. When you keep your foot in it, and you're not a teammate. Yeah. Let's go to Beer Cat at Brown Cat Brew. Santino should have stayed the course instead of driving off into the grass as he did. If he gets a hip check from Herta, so be it. And aside, I low-key want this beef to keep growing into the 2020 version of Paul Tracy and Sebastian Bourdais in the Champ Car days. Now, that would be fun. Granted, I mean, Santino weighs 11 pounds. Colton maybe weighs 13 pounds. These are two lovers, certainly not fighters. So I could see them taking off their gloves and doing the little psh-psh across one another's helmet. But true fisticuffs, grief, pushing and shoving, I don't know if I see it from these two, but I love the idea of there being some beef just because, beef. It's what's for dinner. Andrew Belbis. Belbis. Yes, sorry, Andrew. The letters in the order that they happen to fall in your last name are awesome. My brain, I don't know if you guys know, it doesn't really matter, but dyslexia is something that I don't have a huge problem with, but I can be challenged in that department. The way that your last name is spelled and the order of the letters, my brain gets tripped up pretty not goodly. So I apologize if I am going to stick on that most times when I try and read it. He says, should Ferrucci have faced a harsher punishment? I thought he should have been parked because of an unsafe reentry to the track. Realistically, he could have taken out the entire field minus the two drivers in front of him. You guys notice how close Scott Dixon came to getting hit? And if he did get nudged or touched, by 1 inch or with 1 inch of Santino's front wing, then I missed it. But, ooh, that. You want to talk about a bunch of folks chasing after a driver with baseball bats. I'm really glad that he, by the tiniest millimeter of a gap, didn't take Dixie out as well. I don't know if he should have faced a harsher punishment, because I don't know what super harsher punishment would have done parking him. I mean, I don't. It was dumb from the outset, and he should have known better, but it didn't strike me as some sort of, call it, dickish move, Andrew. Like, oh, he's just going to try something, and, if it doesn't get pulled off, he's just going to take out a bunch of people and doesn't care. Error in judgment versus intent, I guess I would say. He obviously did not want to go off the road. He obviously did not want to expose his belly to Herta and then be told that, thanks, I'm going to stick the knife in right here. He didn't want any of that to happen. I'm confident in saying that. But I don't know, maybe because I don't remember every level of all the things they can do to him in the rule book or the penalty guide. I mean, do you stop the guy and park him for 60 seconds or 2 minutes? Or, I don't know, make him stop the car, get out, and go apologize to all of Felix Rosenquist's crew and Felix. Felix is a guy who might throw a punch. I love that dude. Not just because it's Santino, but I mean, he's a punchy little guy. I love that guy. But then maybe have to get down on one knee and apologize to his teammate, Alex Palou. Oh, man. I mean, that, of all the things that really saddened me, that's the one that stood out most from that incident. Because as I wrote, and as Alex told us in a story a day or two before the race, he really looked at Mid-Ohio as the turnaround event for him, and really the one where he could make a big statement to get re-signed next year. He has a one-year contract. And Saturday went okay, but not great. Sunday, obviously, Santino qualified second, what I believe he qualified fourth, whatever it was, and gets taken out by his teammate after having a great opportunity to show his hardcore road racing talent. And to make matters worse, his teammate continues essentially undamaged. So other than penalty, and I don't remember if he had to change a nose or something like that, but yeah, I know that those that he hit would love to have seen a harsher punishment, but I'm also not a big fan of the hyper focusing on something like this where you go, well, hey, if he's done it one other time, two other times, and we're now talking a second or third instance, yeah, there's a pretty good argument to be made for a heavy hammering of the kid. He's not known for this kind of big, grandiose brain fart and ruining other people's days. So, yeah, it was bad, but I don't feel like they should have thrown the proverbial book at him. Let's see, last thing or two here. Our pal Lance Snyder, our minister of mirth for the show. First lap, race two. From the replays, it looked very much like Herta ran Ferrucci off the track, but Ferrucci got a penalty. Herta then proudly announces he ran him off track. How do you think that will sit with race control going forward? Does Ferrucci have a dump Herta and get out of jail free card? I would say not. You know this, Lance, and I know this because you know this, but I'm just sharing it with others. You could look at it and say, oh, Herta didn't give him enough room and blah, blah, blah. That's this corner, the way that that worked. That's not how experienced racers in race control would look at the situation. They would look at it from the way that they did. Well, dude, why are you putting yourself out there? Okay. Any, you go back and watch the SCCA club race from Mid-Ohio last month, a year ago, 20 years ago. And all the footage is going to show you that every person that tries to do that same thing that he did usually gets run off the track and ends up in the grass. So you do, if you're the millionth guy to do it, there's not a lot of sympathy. It is interesting, though, noting that Colton both called Ari Leyendyk's good name into question at the last race, and then here on NBC does readily admit, yeah, I absolutely invited him into an off-track excursion because he shouldn't have put himself there. I got to believe those things are going to stick in some people's minds. I would say that if Colton does anything like this, anything that, I don't want to say it has to be I was about to say reproduction of Mid-Ohio with Ferrucci. I don't think it has to be that, but I think, as our pal Calvin Fish likes to say on those IMSA broadcasts, there's any argy-bargy inverving Herta, I'm just going with it, this would be a situation where I think Colton, over the last three races, not like he needs to drive differently, but I think he needs to be aware that he might have caught their attention more than he wants. And it usually doesn't work out well for you if you get engaged in another thing. Last item here, Gary Chin. How you doing, Gary? Says, Dale Coyne must not have been too happy about one of his cars taking out the other. Any word from your sources if Dale was a little peeved with Mr. Santino's driving at Mid-Ohio Race 2? I would say you can safely assume Dale was not happy. When was the last time Dale Coyne Racing qualified second and fourth for an IndyCar race? Ever? It's been a really long time since Dale has had not just one car qualifying that high up, but both cars. This was shaping up, provided there was nothing else weird going on, for being a pretty amazing day for them. If you consider where Colton qualified and finished, where Rossi qualified and finished, where a lot of folks qualified and finished, it's pretty close, if not exactly where they started. So, just saying, I think the day proved out to be one that, barring brain farts, absolutely should have been at least one coin car on the podium, if not just a double top five for them. And, yeah, so happiness, not high. Would also say that Jimmy Vassar, Mr. James Sully Sullivan, you know, these are folks who are just wanting and needing results. This is a time of the year where you secure your current sponsors, keep them from going if they're unhappy, sign more. It just wasn't a good look. Inopportune timing, and the same can absolutely be said for Alex being taken out. They've got, what, guaranteed rate? I don't even know what that is, but they've had guaranteed rate company on the car for the last couple of races. You know, they need money to make sure they can keep doing things together. Oh, yeah. Having that car parked for the race, not exactly what they were hoping for. All right, we're done with the whole 6-7 questions about Santino. Let's move on to Colin Young. Hey, Colin. Says, I gotta say, the release of Alex Rossi out of his pit stall into the path of Herta during race one looked way worse than what got him a penalty during the Indy 500. Thoughts? Completely agree, Colin. What's the thing that every person holding the whistle in a basketball game, football game, whatever, gets yelled at about, or you hear players complain about? It's consistency. Hey, you blew the whistle, ref, on this person for doing that thing, but you didn't blow it on whenever when they did it to me, and same thing with race control. So were the situations identical? No. You have Colton pitting and Alex leaving versus Alex leaving and Takuma leaving, and then some contact actually being made on the way out. So it's not exactly a matchy-matchy identical thing. But I had the same thought, Colin, of like, oh, well, that had the potential of going really bad if Colton didn't help the situation out there and just kept his foot down and pulled right into the box. There would have been a pretty ugly contact, I think. So, yeah, I will say that consistency didn't seem to be as flowing into Mid-Ohio in that instance as I maybe thought, and like you and maybe some others, I thought about the Indy penalty as well and said, yeah, that was really ticky-tack. That was nonsense. I said it then, but I mean, it really stood out as nonsense knowing there was a no-call here in the instance you reference. Our man Jerry Siddeth, what explains the sudden success of Andretti cars at the doubleheader weekend? Also, as someone who typically goes to Mid-Ohio, can we get the start of the race moved to 1:30 on a permanent basis? Makes the drive home a lot easier. Also, kindly closes with, I hope you and your lovely wife are well. The photos I've seen of the Bay Area of late look otherworldly. Yeah. I can tell you here, Jer, that at 7:12 p.m., I can see farther out of the window than I have in a while. So I can see some trees that are maybe hundreds of feet farther than what I was able to view due to the smoke as of yesterday, saw what was, I believe, to be the sun trying to vaguely remind us of its existence about an hour ago. Couldn't see it, but could see brightness behind all of the white smoke. It's been probably about a month, though. I don't know exactly, maybe 3 weeks, but 3 to 4 weeks since I've seen the sun, because it's been behind this wall of crazy craziness going on here. So thanks for the note. Also, usually wake up each morning, despite closing every window, everything, with the faint smell of smoke in the house. And we're not exactly close to the major fires by any means. So yeah, you gotta, can't only imagine what it's like, Jer, for those who are really close to what's, yeah, this craziness here. I'd say randomness, Jerry. I really would. The Andretti team's been missing a couple of tents for most of the year, if not the entire year, everywhere they've gone, road and street courses. And yeah, Rossi had that one podium at Road America, but, you know, never looked like he was close to vying for the win. Obviously, they've been working like mad to try and find what they got wrong and overcome it and do new development, most likely in the damping area more than anything else, and come up with things that make their cars faster. And although I haven't had a chance to ask, it's very possible that that happened, where we had some new suspension developments on the cars for this weekend. And then there's also the strong likelihood that the team nailed things rolling off of the trailer, or came pretty darn close. I don't know if they were all the way there on Saturday, but what struck me on Sunday was, yeah, I think they rolled off the trailer closer than they've ever been and had a very good day on Saturday. Obviously, Alex had another podium. Hunter Ray was very competitive. Marco was also pretty competitive there for a little bit. But it seemed like they got things much closer to start, Jerry. And if you do that, and you can go out and have a really productive and educational first race in this doubleheader format, tend to apply that overnight. And that's exactly what they did. Colton also, I don't know why I didn't mention him. I remember what I said 1 minute ago. How sad is that? Colton was also quick on Saturday. I think they just got it right this weekend. And we're hoping, because it's always better when you have more of the big teams up there making things fun and interesting, that that will maintain and carry over into the Harvest Grand Prix doubleheader. So, yeah, always good to start close, because I'll tell you, man, when you don't, you fight like heck, and you usually end up making a lot of improvements, and your final results do not reflect it at all. You know, that's what we've been talking about for most of the season, right? Oh, Rossi was sixth. Colton was fifth on the day, but never really was in a position to challenge. Well, if you take from where they started from the first practice session, often the only practice session this year, and realize how far they evolved the car in a short amount of time to get to that fifth or sixth place, nowhere near a win or the podium, but you'd be surprised at how much progress is made, but it never really jumps out in the final result. Let's see. JD Ellis. How you doing, JD? I don't know if I say this often enough, but I appreciate many of you. Obviously all of you, but I appreciate the many of you, JD as well, in that group, who make time every week or almost every week to send stuff in. I know that we all have pretty busy lives, and I do appreciate the fact that there are some especially appreciated regulars who send in good stuff. It says, any reason beyond an obvious different promo deal for the Andretti and Shank cars to have prominent HPD branding on their engine cowling? It says, also watching practice on Saturday, noticed the Chevy exhaust note under acceleration had a pronounced staccato or pulsing note compared to the linear note of the Hondas. Just different choices in power delivery or something else? I would say you're spot on in the first note here about the what's on the cars in terms of HPD and Honda branding I am unaware of a identical, call it contract rider, contract note that is identical across all cars. Because like you, I've certainly seen that on some, you have big old fat Honda Performance Development stickers or Honda stickers. Some have both. You know, another thing you may have noticed too, as I take a sip of coffee here too late in the evening, you also noticed, or if you haven't before, pay attention to how many Honda Power drivers in interviews say how proud they are to be powered by Honda. Not a coincidence. Not a coincidence at all. Would say, and that's a positive thing, by the way, would say there has been a increased effort between the automotive brand, its racing arm, and its, call it, partner teams, really tighten things up and be more in sync on the marketing side, the promotions side. So if you hear Scott Dixon being interviewed after having a bad day or whatever, he will tell you how proud he is to be powered by Honda. He'll also find a reason to scratch his cheek or something so you can see the watch that he's promoting on his wrist, if not the mask that is made by his manager and good friend Stefan Johansson, and so on. Colton does that. Again, you'll hear that, I don't know if I want to say from all, but pay attention to those you do hear it from. And it might suggest that for those who are telling you how proud they are to be powered by Honda, those might be the ones that have closer relationships with the brand than those who don't. So, yeah, there's that. I had someone else ask about the engine note. I just need to ask some better questions about that, JD. I've heard the same. It is not new. I don't know if, well, I do know that we're talking differences in how the ECU is being used to deliver power. But I believe I know what it is. I don't want to say that because I would rather have smarter people confirm or say, no, idiot, it's actually this. But yes, there is a very easy way to tell whether you have a Chevrolet or a Honda going by, definitely with what is coming out of the exhaust note in terms of that modulation and pulsing sound. Where are we going? You know, we don't have a ton of questions left, which, am I doing a good job? Am I doing a bad job? I don't know. Where are we at? We're at 47, 48 minutes. That works. All right, where are we going to go next? Ed Joris. Now that you've seen it twice at Mid-Ohio, what do you think about fitting IndyCar races into a two-hour window? The most obvious thing to me was the way that the big fuel window left Dixie an option for a recovery drive of epic proportions. Not sure if that is good or bad. Other than that, it seemed like the shortening of the races leaves less time for strategies to play out. That is indeed correct, Ed. You close here by saying, to address that, can the fuel cell capacities of an IndyCar be adjusted in some manner as it's done with sports car fuel cells? Yes. So it's the same exact fuel cell. Obviously different sizes, but what you find for a fuel bladder in an IndyCar is the same that you'll find in a sports car. Might be made by a different vendor, but they're effectively the same. It's the same technology and construction style and just about everything. Different volume, but yes. And so I think what Ed's getting to is, can you increase the amount of fuel that can go into that cell or decrease accordingly? Yes, you can. But I hear what you're saying about the two-hour window. I think, can say without a doubt that had the races been 90 laps apiece, there certainly would have been even more options for Scott Dixon or any of the other drivers who were on the back foot, either because of a poor qualifying or their own mistake, to get creative by using 90 laps worth of racing compared to 75 to try and work their way out of it. So, yeah, I don't know if farting around with fuel capacity is going to be the thing that gets us there, but It was, yeah, Sunday's race was entertaining. I know some of you were like, hey, didn't you say the doubleheaders, the second race is, that's always boring and processional. Sunday is a lot of fun. Look, I can't argue that when drivers crash into each other and run off track, it gets more interesting. I'd also suggest that if you remove those things, it's kind of processional. I mean, Dixie obviously did Dixon-like things, but as I mentioned a little while ago, there's a lot of people who started and finished right where they started or pretty darn close. So, yeah. Anyways, I don't know if I have a proper way to wrap up that thing, Ed, but yeah. Hey, how about we do 90 and 90 and then just really see who's truly pulling in halfway through Sunday's race to say, let me up, I've had enough. That might be fun. Let's go to our pal Matt Philpott. Says, Marshall, I feel like early on in this season, there was a sense of fear that some IndyCar teams are in real danger of having serious budget issues. Now, as outlined in your first silly season article, there's a fair amount of talk of possible team expansions. What has caused such a big positive change in rhetoric? I would say we are still facing some pretty serious concerns about a number of teams to get bigger and or maintain what they have. Coin Team stands out as one, with Alex Palou's unaware that it is funded beyond this season and also not aware that it is thoroughly super funded at the moment. You can look throughout probably half the field and say, okay, not totally sure how that gets paid for next year. And there's still a little bit too much of that. But I think what we've seen is, it's a generalism. I'm not saying it's the case everywhere, but I think we've had a little bit of a reminder come, Matt, as a result of COVID and even the financial challenges that have hit so many teams. I think we've had some reminders within those teams, within the business development groups there, even within the sponsors who are a part of things, many of whom want some money back or some help there to get through the economy right now. Even in that scenario, Matt, I still think we've had a little bit of a reminder among a lot of people that they really love this. They really want to be a part of this. And so somewhere in there, I'm kind of sort of confident in saying that the big fears that hit everybody when we had the shutdowns, when sponsors with a season that had yet to start, whom had made one or two payments or paid a lot or whatever it was, who'd forked out money and were sitting there with nothing to show for it, with companies that are shutting down and profits being lost and all kinds of things. I think we're staring at a pretty big and realistic crunch that time of a lot of sponsors saying, hey, this is bad and the economy's in bad shape and we're not getting what we paid for. And yeah, I don't know if we're really meant to be around here much longer. I think that message was delivered loud and clear to most teams, if not all teams in some capacity. And I think those teams speaking to us about it shared those concerns straight away. And I believe they were fully valid at the time. I still believe many of them are valid, Matt. But I also think that as time has gone on, country has kind of sort of gotten back to work. Economy is still soft, but, you know, we're going to use our Montoya again. It is what it is. I still think we've seen this thing where, despite all the aforementioned challenges, I think a lot of folks have decided, yeah, we're racers. We love this. We can still find value. So let's keep working together. The growth plans we had in position the beginning of the year, that took a big hit. We were talking about these things internally. Hey, we want to try and expand to a third car the second half of the year, or at the end of the year, we're going to expand in some way. I think folks have just decided, okay, we don't have all the pieces of the puzzle yet financially. I don't know. We might still lose a sponsor or two, but let's grow. Let's do big things instead of do small things. So I think there's some spirit of that in here as well, Matt. I know that's not a sound business plan, but if we use the Arrow McLaren SP team as an example, Sam Schmidt told me, what we all knew. Yeah, we were planning to do a third car part-time with Fernando. And the good thing about it was, well, the other two cars are basically full up on sponsorship. Like, we're good. We're super good. Might even need a third car to help place some of those sponsors. It's great. And although this took a bit of a shot this year because of COVID, etc., they're still planning to try and do that next year and are confident that they're going to be in that same position financially. One other thing just to mention here, and it's a little bit part of the gamesmanship, Matt. It's even if you don't have everything, even if you're not sure you're going to get everything to be able to do that extra car, there's still value in that rhetoric you mentioned of saying you're going to. And it's baiting the hook. It's mentioning that you still are planning to do this and hope that some folks want to come along with you. So a lot of different angles to this. There's not a single answer to it, but the positivity within the paddock right now, there's still a lot of negativity and concerns, but things are far more positive when I speak with team owners, managers, and such than I truly anticipated at this stage of the year. Let's go to Ed Joris again. Says, I have no faith in IndyCar being able to come up with an Aero solution for Iowa and Gateway. Why not have a test next season where you get 10 cars on track and try push to pass? He says, as long as I'm at it, why isn't the Indy test including more cars? Isn't the main issue overtaking when there's someone mired in, say, 10th or 20th? What are they going to learn about from a four-car test? From what I'm told, it's a six-car test. Ed, maybe I mentioned four mistakenly last week, or maybe you saw that somewhere else, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's now down to four. I don't know. But I heard that it's a six-car test, so there's that. I don't know what plans they have in mind for Iowa and Gateway, but I would say I expect them to venture out to one, if not both. Folks being vocal about not being happy about the product. Boy, before Roger Penske bought things, those things were heard. There just wasn't someone taking them personally to the level that RP and his organization does. They have very thin skin. I don't know if that's good, but I know that in situations like this, where fans like yourself have been pretty vocal about, that kind of sucked. I've seen much better from IndyCar. Those things do not get brushed off in the way they might have been in the past. I'm not saying IndyCar brushed them off in the past, but I think there was less of a we're in charge of the overall quality of the show mindset like Roger brings. So if you look at all the renovations he has done to the Speedway, that all speaks to someone who is really thin skin about criticism and not getting things right and delivering the highest possible quality thing for fans. I'd say that mindset, Ed, applies directly to the racing and competition that takes place on track. I can only hope the really, really kind of crazy, insane level of attention that Roger applies to such things gets applied to the quality of on-track racing and fixing whatever needs to be fixed. Okay, we are getting down to the last three questions here. Thomas Ayrton from Facebook. Hey, Marshall, mini rant coming up. Maybe it's the climate of the world, maybe social media in general, but I've seen on Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, etc. Any criticisms of the broadcast, the drivers, etc. met with anger and name-calling, being blocked instead of genuine discussion. Might be a case of Juan Pablo Montoya's, it is what it is. But it might also be a bit of a barrier for new fans or just fans in general for the sport. I love a good debate about sports, but the rashness of the replies due to any bit of criticism shuts that door real quick. That's an interesting one, Thomas. I wouldn't say I am quick to block and whatnot, and I know you didn't ask this of me, but I'm just trying to share a mindset. I'm not quick to block criticisms for this if they're based in logic and reason. There's some folks who just are going to always find the negative first. That's their nature. That's all they do. I don't have a lot of time for them. And does that mean anything? No. It does suggest, though, that if you come across rampant pushback, fighting, name-calling, being blocked, and whatever, if you or someone else says something critical about the race, broadcast, the drivers, the whatever, and it's a wide variety of people doing that blocking and or yelling back at you, that would suck. At least as I have experienced things, tends to be a bit of a narrow band. Like, oh yeah, that guy's got something critical. Oh yeah, that person's got something unhinged. The I don't really want to hear from you anymore thing, for me, it's when it's totally unhinged or just really dumb, right? And I'm a guy who's posted many things on social media that qualify or certified dumb. So it's not name calling there. It's just, I can tell you that I see some things and I don't necessarily block. I don't necessarily, of late, I've just been trying to not respond and just let it go altogether. But, you know, folks saying this person's the worst driver in the history of wherever. And it's like, we had that, I think, a week or two ago with somebody calling out Montoya as not a good driver. And it's just, you go, what planet do I join you on? Because you're not on ours. And I, you know, I don't know if psychotropics are your friend, but there's some lunacy involved here. And you don't have to be a Montoya fan. You don't have to like him or anything else. His racing record says, without a doubt, he is indeed a good driver, if not a great driver. There's no argument to be made that has any merit in reality, facts, or anything else that he is a bad race car driver. And yet, there you go. So, if anything, I try and have a little bit of fun with lunatic posts like that. But the super angry, name-calling, shouty stuff you're mentioning, yeah, I see more of it than I would like to. I also think you have a great point here of, hey, maybe we could build the fan base a little bit more if there was less hostility from whatever sectors. But I don't think that's reality, Thomas. I think social media is a perfect reflection of humanity. And it's also a perfect reflection of keyboard warriors and those who want to be seen as cool and those who want to be seen as dunking on other people and ha ha. Like, it's all the earmuffs, shittiest aspects of how human beings treat one another done from the safety of one's smartphone or keyboard. So, you know this, I know this, it's been that way forever. I'm saying nothing new. I'm just trying to say that while I totally agree with you and I'm on your side, we would be silly to think that, oh, collectively, the grumpy, angry, name-calling, shouty, blocky, whatever, IndyCar fans, they're going to magically come to a consensus that they should be nicer and better for the sake of the sport. Ain't happening. So pick and choose wisely. The next person asking a question here, Andy Merrick, whose Twitter handle is at MerrickSpeed. He's just about the nicest, warmest, most positive guy that loves IndyCar and sports cars, loves racing in general. He's going to overwhelm you with positivity. So would just say or suggest, Thomas, as you circumnavigate social media and friends do and potential IndyCar fans you've spotted or recognized happen to wander around, maybe point them towards our pal Jaron Demendal, champcar.web, I think is his Twitter handle, or Andy, or good Lord, how many other really, truly excellent folks that we can think of. Yeah, at champweb.net. who else? And I should probably build a list of just really awesome, fun people that you need to follow for sure. Matt Archuleta at Indy 44 is one of them. Heck, there's many. Maybe that's something we should do. And I know it's a little late in the show, and I probably should have put this up front because there's probably very few people who are still listening by this point. Why don't we do something fun and or of vague value for IndyCar fans and fandom? Why don't we collectively, why doesn't someone, start a little Twitter thread with not just your favorite people to follow? And I'm not necessarily talking drivers and the high profile ones. I'm talking fans. Maybe that'd be fun to highlight two or three and tag all your friends on it. Say, hey, if you like IndyCar, these are some fans you might enjoy fellowshipping with. And hopefully they can add some, and others will see. I don't know. Maybe there's a pretty cool list that gets developed if there isn't already one. So I'm not saying that these things haven't been done 1,000 times by others who thought about it long before I did, but just thinking in response to your little note for the episode here, Thomas, maybe some folks can put together some good names, good folks, and those are the ones. Build a coalition of the willing. So there you go. All right, we're going to go to Andy's, then our pal John Wojnar, a.k.a. John Ranjal, and we're going to say farewell for this episode. Unless there are any more. There's a couple snuck down here. We'll see if we get to them or not. Andy says, Marshall, Mid-Ohio is a track with such incredible history for the SCCA, IndyCar, and IMSA. Is there a Mid-Ohio story or two from your career, either engineer or journalist, that stick out to you? Many, Andy. Let's see. And this is just one of the more recent ones that stands out, but as a team manager / engineer, I think it was 2000. What would a four maybe 2003, 2004, running a Dodge Viper World Challenge GT entry for, I think, Stu Frederick was his name, and out in the grass hill parking area where they threw all the World Challenge cars. And I remember we had a youngish, newish crew chief on the car, John Horton, who has since gone on to become a very good race engineer and crew chief in IMSA. And he's excellent streetcar mechanic, specialized in Vipers, didn't know anything about racing. And I just remember that was a really fun and interesting weekend with him, because Stu would talk about the car has understeer. As I go through turn one, which is a high speed, constant radius corner. And I think he mentioned understeer at another corner that fell into the same kind of category as turn one. And remember talking with John, who said he wanted to learn these things. Hey, I know I'm just wrenching on the car, but I would love to learn about the engineering side. It's great. So said, all right, well, Stu was mentioning that, highest speed corner of the track, he's dealing with steady state understeer. What would you recommend we do to try and improve the car's handling there? And his answer was, put more rear wing in it. And I said, all right, we got a long ways to go here, brother. Because if you do that, you're creating more rear downforce. You're pressing down on the back of the car even more. And the problem that he's discussing is not having enough weight on the front tires. So the solution you just suggested, it would actually exacerbate the problem. So that would not be something that we did. And it was just really fun from there, because it was a guy who's saying, all right, hey, if you'll tell me stuff, I'll listen and try and apply it. It was really cool to see him pick the stuff up so quickly and then go on to become very good at doing this stuff himself, even these days. Remember one of the big first lessons I got in people actually read your nonsense was, I think, the 2007 or 2008 America Le Mans Series race at Mid-Ohio and the BK Motorsports factory Mazda team at that time. I'm trying to think, what were they on? I think they were on Yokohama tires, and they were terrible tires. It's also a semi-terrible team, but the tires in particular, they certainly took the stone from Firestone's name. They incorporated the stone into the grip possibilities within those tires in LMP2. There were a number of P2 tire suppliers then, as I recall, Andy. Michelin, though, was the clear, if you don't have that, you got nothing type quality of brand. And whatever it was, I'm a little bit foggy on the change, but Mazda changed from, I don't remember what, Yokohamas to Kumos or some other thing that didn't necessarily help the situation, but they just had to try something. And I remember going to the next and wrote about it as such and tried to be honest as, you know, just straightforward. This is what the team was saying, and that's what I went with, and I observed their performances on track. I could corroborate the fact that, yes, they were grip challenged laterally and longitudinally just about everywhere I saw them compete. And so there you go, wrote about that change, whatever it was, got to the next race, and Robert Dole, who, let's see, some of you might remember, who was part of the Panther Racing team on the, I think, marketing and promotion side. He was with Yokohama at the time, and I knew him a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit, and was walking behind the pits at Road America at the next race, and I hope I have those races correct, and he sees me and his eyes light up, and is like, hey, we need to talk. And I'm like, okay, well, that thing you wrote, that was bad and garbage and all kinds of things, and you shouldn't have said it or wrote it or anything, yada, 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 and you should have called me first, and we should have had the right to respond and have a rebuttal to your opinion and so on and so forth. And I just said, brother, I hear you, and I know that you're frustrated that your tires aren't good, but I can't ignore what I see. And if your partner team, whatever team you want to call them, former team, are saying the same thing, that we're making a change because we want to be more competitive and we believe these tires to be the number one problem in liability, it's not really so much of an opinion thing, right? It's just stating what was then fact. And you looked at the lap times, Andy, and it certainly said, yes, big disparity here. And all that stuff being said, I'm not saying Robert didn't have some form of a point, but the main takeaway was Mid-Ohio, whatever column about Mazda making a tire manufacturer change. I always think of Mid-Ohio for that change because of the grief that I got from Yokohama afterwards. And I also tried to share with them that I think you're airing your frustration at me saying what the problem was, that it wasn't some esoteric thing, but if you want to be mad at me, you can, but I didn't make your tires. I had nothing to do with them. I just observed them and also had a team tell me the same thing that I observed. So I don't know what you want me to do here. So that stands out to me as a lesson that came from Mid-Ohio. I'm trying to think what else, because there's lots and lots and lots of memories. Hey, here's one, totally random, but we're getting to the end of the show where the super random stuff happens. My first event working for Racer, this is after Speed shut down in the middle of 2013, happened to be the Mid-Ohio event. And the very first cat that we had at home, got her in 2005, before we got married later in 2005, but got Sasha in 2005. She was going through hell with some form of serious, I don't know what the problem was, digestive problem. I don't know what, but I know that through the latter stages of 2012 into 2013, she was in a really bad way. And so we spent a frightening amount of money at the vet, the animal hospital, and I was doing a lot of driving to and from there. She was having episodes, it felt like, every other week. And really long story short, Andy, Sasha was not doing well. We were having to manually feed her, mix up high caloric food, put it into a syringe. I would have to hold her and pry her mouth open, and my wife would feed her, and just things where it was our first cat and we went all out. And in hindsight, we probably should have taken the note from her that she was ready to go and wanted to go. Well, my first day at the track, Friday, Mid-Ohio IndyCar 2013, I am just got to my car at the top of the paddock, and generally just sat down and was about to turn the car on, and my wife called and said that Sasha died. And in massive tears, she's freaking out. I've got massive tears going on, and we're trying to figure out what the hell to do. And I had taken care of pretty much all the bad stuff with Sasha, my wife working full time, me working from home. It was pretty much, she was my patient, if you want to call it that, at home. And so this was the first time my wife was having to really handle all the really bad stuff with Sasha, and she died. And so it really hit my wife super hard, because when we got Sasha, my wife was not employed. And so for the first couple of years of Sasha's life, she was home every day with my wife. Plus me being on the road and having this happen without having your partner slash husband there to help with a big crisis problem. That's another thing that always stands out. My very first day working for Racer, our one and only pet we'd ever had, who was there, we got before we got married, and it was really my wife's best friend at home, you know, house cat kind of thing, coming home from work, especially while I was gone. Well, she dies. And so the severity of the situation was enough to where I called Racer's editor, I think David Malsher at that time, and he said, hey, if you need to go home and be with your wife, I fully understand. And I wanted to, but I also realized if I get on a plane to go home with the death of a pet on day one of working for Racer, that probably sets some sort of question mark in people's mind. So I did the thing that didn't feel right, but I knew that I needed to do, and stayed, and just spent the whole drive home, and then hours upon hours upon hours on the phone with my wife, and the following day and the following day, and flew home and dealt with everything from there. So a lot of weird stuff from Mid-Ohio, huh, Andy? Wing angles and getting yelled at about bad tires that I said were bad tires, and death of a cat. Not a lot of racing in there. Sorry, my friend. We're going to close here, I think, for the episode with our man John Wojnar. It says, MP, a few weeks ago you said you would take design cues from the Panos DP01 for the next generation IndyCar chassis. I have to ask, though, what features would you take from the greatest racing vehicle ever, the Mach 5? Can you choose, or you can choose, two from the standard choices of A, jump jacks, B, all grip belt tires, C, cutting blades, D, deflector shield, E, night vision, F, submarine mode, G, homing robot. Speed Racer, right? That was the name of the cartoon. Can I tell you? I've never seen it. I know of it. I mean, I've seen the Mach 5. I think that's what it's from. If not, boy, am I missing this one. I'm sorry, John. I didn't even see the movie, that bad movie that looked bad, and I saw a couple minutes of and determined, yeah, this is really bad. So, yeah, I may be sucking here a little bit on Speed Racer stuff. He closed by saying, hashtag me personally. I'd love to see jump jacks in submarine mode on the next chassis because, well, why not? What says you? I have no idea what you're referring to, buddy. So I says everything you says is good and right, and we're just going to go with that. Why don't we go into a little tiny bit of overtime here? Let me see where we're at on the good old clockety clock. Yeah, our late teens. Okay, just a couple more. Let's see. Apparently, Pato Award called Max Childe an effing pig on the in-car radio after he got passed by him in race two. That's according to Raymond Wong. He also wants to know will the paddock be serving dishes of roast pork or bacon at the next event as a shot at Max Chilton. Really do need to hear these live radio streams because it sounds like there's so much fun happening. There's no way to stay on top of all of them. I believe someone asked about if I am aware of anyone doing NASCAR, Fox on NASCAR's equivalent of their, what is it, radioactive edit with all the spicy or interesting in-car radio and crew chief engineer to driver communications, kind of a post-race cut down with all the best stuff from there. I'm unaware of that. Whomever asked, I apologize. I forget. But it does make me think, yes, oh, we need all the in-car audio because it is spicy. Jeremy Davis, as I fight off a burp to close the show, MP, with the recent news of Jimmy Johnson coming to IndyCar with Chip Ganassi on a road and street course only for 2021. Any chance Kurt Busch, a Ganassi Cup driver, runs the fourth Ganassi car at the Indy 500? I swear I heard or read that Kurt and Monster have a great relationship and they would support his racing after he, quote, left Cup. All the best to you and Mrs. Pruitt. Awesome. Thanks, Jeremy. So this is going to be one of those really stupid little, let me just raise a quick point things that no one remembers and no one has a reason to remember after it gets fixed. So Jimmy Johnson, Chip Ganassi have committed to doing IndyCar with one another, provided Jimmy finds the budget. So this is not a go. There's not a fourth car being prepared right now with Jimmy's name on it. This is, if you can find the budget to do this, we're doing it together. Got to get that part finished up first. As I mentioned on last week's show, whether it was the first or second of the part two, of course we expect Jimmy to find the money. Just saying here, this is a commitment to do something together while they're searching for the thing to finalize and absolutely make sure what happens there is what they want to happen. So, again, little footnote, but it is worth mentioning because it's not a done deal, y'all. As for Kurt, yeah, maybe, I guess. I mean, Kurt showed very, very well in his one-off in 2014. He's with a very good team that ran very well that day. So all positive things. Say, Chip, when I'm talking about nostalgia, who should we run an extra car or put in whatever for this big race, it's tended to be a Ganassi Rolex 24 sports car thing than spin the wheel on which extra guy they could put in for the 500. Never happened with Kyle Larson, despite everybody seemingly saying, dude, do it. Jamie McMurray, never happened. I'm probably forgetting other Ganassi drivers that were in that capacity back in the day of Cup that got brought over to do IndyCar. I just haven't seen that be a thing. And I'd love to see Kurt do it with Chip at the 500. That'd be really cool. Just state the, I guess, obvious? Overstate the obvious? I don't know. Maybe it is or isn't obvious, Jeremy, but the Ganassi approach at things like the Indy 500, which they know, we all know, it's the biggest thing, is not to overextend themselves. There's not a lot of experimentation in their mindset or approach. Hey, why don't we try running this guy? Hey, that'd be cool. Like, there's options aplenty at all times for them to do that. And they just haven't. They really haven't. So while I'd love to see it, and I wouldn't say it's a total impossibility, it would certainly take a change in philosophy and approach for them to do it. Let's see, James Lau, you are going to get the final question of the episode. What happened to Taku this weekend? That's a mighty fine question without an exact answer. Reminds me a little bit of some weekends this year where Taku has been everywhere and Graham has been nowhere. We did not have a whole lot of Takuma Sato running right up front, and boy, everything is good and feeling kind of sort of normal as it's been of late, right? I mean, coming off of a win, a second place, and I know it wasn't everything you wanted, but a ninth after brushing the wall, but was running okay, you know, definitely a good weekend at Gateway. To have a 17th and 18th at Mid-Ohio, just kind of sort of nowhere, Graham fourth both days, just, I don't have the answer, I don't know, but I do know that it stood out to me. My note for my post-race brain dump on Saturday, which I will hopefully finish in and around the time you're reading this and get it up on thrownintoracer.com, was Takuma Sato certainly wins the Mr. Invisible Award for Saturday. He was at the race, but he certainly wasn't in the race. We didn't even know he was there. We knew he was there a tiny bit on Sunday just because of him running long on a fuel stint. And again, I hope that was Sunday from memory. But yeah, just nowhere. And as a result, he was the biggest faller in the standings coming from the event. He went into the good old race weekend, fourth in points, leaving Gateway. He was fourth in points, had a nice little bit of separation from Colton. After Saturday's race, he maintained fourth, but Will Power drew up pretty close. Will jumped from 8th to 5th. And so while the bad Saturday didn't affect him in the championship at the end of that race, another bad day certainly did. And so he fell from 4th to 7th in the standings. I mean, he jumped from 17th to 6th after winning the Indy 500. Had a obviously very good open to the Gateway weekend, moved up to fourth, and had held fourth for the next three races. It was really only after two bad days of scoring minimal points, James, that, yeah, Taku indeed fell down to seventh. He's now directly behind his teammate, Graham Arayhall. He's 1 point behind. And Graham, too, you know, those pair of fourth places helped him. Graham only moved one spot from 7th to 6th, but it's still better than going the opposite direction. So I don't know, but I'm going to use the same damn caveat all year long. It's 2020, y'all. COVID is responsible somehow. I don't know if he got corona on his brakes, maybe, or his tires or something, but there was something non-usual for good old Takuma Sato at Mid-Ohio. All right, this is part one of our what's becoming kind of normal two-part Week in IndyCar listener Q&A, all driven by your questions and becoming two-part because the volume of your questions demands it. So I hope you listen to both. I appreciate our pal Tim Falkowitz for splitting them up into two separate lists that are hopefully equally as interesting. I'm going to try and get to your part two by Wednesday, maybe Thursday at the latest. But this is part one brought to you by Cooper Tires, the Justice Brothers, Toronto Motorsports.com, Bell Racing Helmets, USA.